I'm Christopher Leiden with the performance poet Eli Marienthal. His Hades story is about a little boy obsession with his Haitian twin, a sort of fixation that the earthquake this winter has jolted loose into action. This is open source from the Watson Institute at Brown University, an American conversation with global attitude, we call it. Eli Marienthal in this one is the very picture of millennial possibility. He grew up in the Bay Area, but he's been going back and forth to Haiti since he was 7 years old. How did that happen, Eli?
Well, my father has spent time living all over the world, and Haiti is one of the places that he has spent some considerable time. And I've had the privilege to go visit him and be there any number of times over the course of my life.
Tell us your story.
My story takes place the first night I was ever in Haiti. It is a story that I have reworked and retold to myself and to others over the course of a lifetime, a story that is ever evolving, out of which I am ever deriving new meaning, and I'm pleased to share the most recent iteration with you today. My bones are this reliquary. Make me your sacred. Let me be hollow as an unused slave ship. Still am my structure, God, I can't change this. But form and function both are still just the basics. Digest the relics and filthy the sacred conceived in a crow's nest atop of a slave ship. Shit runs downhill, man, I can't change this. Dig in privy wormholes, add height to this matrix. I am your American, circa 1915. I'm not your water table, I'm more your marine. I am the light hits the film as you survey the scene. I see the signs from the roof say, God help us, no water. But whatever could you mean? It's all around. There's a wormhole at the bottom of the ocean. You can get there. You just have to drown first. There's a wormhole at the bottom of the ocean. Oh, yeah, and you can get there. You just have to drown first. It's carnival time. 93. I'm about a month shy of 7. First time in Haiti. It's a spot my father has been coming for years. Bargained to be a big shot. Cheap land, cheap sex. 13 years later, he'll write to tell me he probably deserved to have his wallet taken, all those pills, and then not using a condom. He's heard you can only get AIDS, though, if you come. He'll look into it, and in furious, well-educated righteousness, I will be left to mull over this pathology of power. The ever-subverted direction of the vector of disease. But I'm a month shy of 7, so I know none of this yet. Only that this is Port-au-Prince, Carnival, Haiti, party in a time of mourning. The black men in military fatigues with their shaved heads, berets that ride high on the back of their crowns look incongruous to me, goose-stepping all over the city like neo-Nazis in American suburbs. From those documentaries that I'm fixated on these days, something about the idea that cataclysm is cyclical, not cataclysmic. From the moment we hit the air of the city, my hands are transformed into hot, swollen, sticky buns of flesh. My accent reverbs in my skull something too hard and demanding against the flexible angles at which buildings are built and doorways moved through. Jean is there to pick us up in that white Mazda minicab truck, which years later I will learn to drive stick on, stick in the sand, and need 10 men to literally lift back on the road. He takes the enormous wool rectangle suitcases that my mother and I have been asked to bring, loaded with t-shirts, cassettes, and condensed milk, and swiftly moves off into the crowd beyond the airport perimeter fence. The crowd! There is a man in the crowd outside of the airport missing a leg, and I wonder, how many times has he come to hang on this particular chain-link fence, which is so new to me? And if he ever hung on it, screaming his head off back when he had two legs? And then I wonder if he ever had two legs at all. Oh, the flesh of my hands is trussed by the heat and my knuckles too swollen to crack. Until the Olufsen. The Olufsen Hotel is a Graham Greene location par excellence, but I don't know this yet. I just know they have a pool. And they will be here for a few days. How many? A few. Until the truck gets some sort of a fix. And then we'll be on our way again to the swaying albatross of abandoned colonial charm that is my father's three-story home in Jacmel, which I haven't seen yet either. I would not ever leave the green grounds of the Olufsen, though, if it were up to me. But it's not. It's my mother's first time in Haiti as well, and she is eager to be about. And besides, even with a president deposed, an embargo on, water in the gasoline, Carnival must go on. That night we watch the rickety floats process in semi-darkness, all of the sequined flags registering in the color spectrum of bruised, faint yellow to twilight purple. Here's what I remember most. Three plastic table and chair sets, a curtain, a heat source, all practically on the parade route. Chicken, rice, and beans. The chicken is stringy and metallic. There's very little I recognize as meat. I pick at it and mostly drink my Coke. I'm not aware of the family watching us until Jean gets up from the table and walks over to them, handing his plate to the eldest boy. But when the boy begins to gnaw on his stripped chicken bones, I am suddenly aware of nothing else. There are four children in all, three boys and a baby in its mother's arms. The youngest of the three boys standing alone is near about 6 or 7, or maybe 8 or 9, though I'm not the kind of six-year-old familiar with the effects of malnutrition. Maybe my mother finishes before my father. Maybe my father finishes before my mother. All I know is that I finish last, and that when I do, everyone in that silent family is eating, except that little boy around my age. And even though the food is nasty, if I could, I would keep on eating forever to avoid that little boy, to keep him from eating my bones. I would eat the tin plates and the vinyl tablecloth. I would swallow my own face to avoid what Jean is setting in motion with what, even in my panic, strikes me as a fabulously graceful gesture of his wrist. I want to tell them. I will scream, but the voice snags somewhere in the chest, too ugly to hear itself, let alone speak, and no sound escapes as the boy steps to the side of me within a crooked arm's reach now, his gaze shifting between me and the half-picked-over plate of food, and his hands hit the plate, and he's gone. He's gone. What I don't remember is if we ever looked into each other's eyes. It feels like we must have. Like no other exchange could have calcified into this memorial transference. But it seems equally implausible that I had the courage to look. Years worth of language will percolate the hollow that my hardening anger makes that night to reveal a frightened boy of nearly 7, rocked trembling mute by the shadow of his world. The discovery that his very flesh is the secret bank account where pillage is deposited and stored. Is this my season of adventure? Is this my role in the singular act of creation? What sort of myth am I? The boy who swallows himself to avoid the boy with nothing. My bowels are this reliquary. I shit out the sacred. Conceived in a slave ship afloat on the faceless. Lullabied greed to believe this is stasis. In that moment, though, if offered, I'd have gladly changed places. Why? How? There's a wormhole at the bottom of the ocean. You can get there. You just have to drown first.
Could I ask you a question about your story?
By all means.
You've been haunted in a way by this extreme caricature of power between white North Americans and Haiti. How do you want to change the story? And what's the prospect of changing a myth that's so deeply ingrained in reality as well as our heads?
There is a practical aspect to the work I would like to be doing in Haiti that has everything to do with growing food. The Haitian landscape has been devastated by any number of natural and unnatural phenomena. I think that everywhere in the world, not just Haiti, but in North America and Europe and Asia and everywhere, one of the most successful strategies for healing the planet is permaculture, which mimics natural systems in such a way that humans at an appropriate scale are able to reap what they need to sustain themselves while contributing without extracting to the ecosystem in which they are a part. As Wendell Berry says, all creative work is a strategy of healing. And so similarly, the story itself is a strategy of healing. Growing food is another strategy of healing. They aren't separate to me, but they play different roles. Is the story political? I suppose the answer is, does it strike a listener as political? It used to be a very political story to me.
Eli, I'm wondering how you would think, as a storyteller, we get past the story of guilty kids of the superpower reaching out to the basket case.
Well, the interesting thing to me in that story is that there was no reaching out. I was totally paralyzed, incapable of reaching out in any way, felt, in fact, quite victimized by the circumstances. I once heard a Vodou priestess say, "If you call the Loas, they will come." That boy in the story is my twin, the other half of my Marasa. I think about him all the time, now more than ever, and I continue to call him, invoke him. It's all that I can do.
Eli Marienthal, thank you for your story. Thank you for your witness.
Paul McCarthy recorded this conversation with Eli Marienthal at the Watson Institute at Brown. Ben Mandelkern edited it. We continue the conversations on Haiti tomorrow with Fabienne Cassius, who is a senior at another course to college in Boston. She will be reading to us from her Letters to My Father. Listeners, feedback on Haiti's earthquake jolts to all our old habits of thinking and doing at our website, radioopensource.org. I'm Christopher Leiden. Thank you for being part of the conversation.